give my life and all I have, but I want to know, will you be there?
That's right, will you be there? Because we're here right now, all right? And we have a packed show for you today, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's a show that actually, well, at the back end of the show, we're going to be talking with a notorious flag burner, Joey Johnson, and he has declared and he's told the world, including Trump, that he's coming. He's coming to burn flags in D.C., and he's basically encouraging people all over the place, talking to them, other people, about thinking about what they should do with the flag. And that's going to be a hell of an interview, okay, a hell of a conversation. He's also going to be joined by Carl Dix, because we got to talk about Carl Dix is from the Revolutionary Communist Party, and he's an advocate for Bob Bacon's New Synthesis of Communism. And we're going to be talking about, too, what is the truth about America? What does it mean? What does it mean for black people? What does it mean for people generally in terms of what we're living in, what we're forced to actually, you know, deal with day in and day out? The constant murders here all over the world, the way that the, you know, murdering everything, okay? They're murdering the climate, they're murdering culture, they're murdering people, they're murdering whatever. But before that, we'll be talking with Michelle Chai from the Revolution Club in Los Angeles about the trial that's going on right now in L.A. And it's a trial that is actually built up around, it's actually what's happening is two people, and we'll get into this a little later, but two people from the Revolution Club in L.A. are being put on trial for daring to stand up and block the freeway and say, no. People have to do something. It's not allowed to actually just sit back and say, everything's cool. Everything's cool, because it isn't. Okay? And this is what this is going to be about. So before we move into the show itself, I want to talk about a few things that have changed since the time we originally did these interviews. As we mentioned in the interview about the trial of two members of the Freeway 9, people who blocked a major freeway in Los Angeles in 2017 as part of an effort to break through the deadly silence that met the fascistic onslaught of the Trump regime. The jury failed to reach a verdict in this trial, and by Friday, the Los Angeles prosecutors announced that they wanted a retrial in the case. On Monday afternoon, the judge in the case granted the city attorney's demand and scheduled a new trial for late July. On July 2nd, Trump announced that the immigration raids he had threatened in mid-June would now occur after July 4th. And we should all be keenly aware that this is coming after the fascistic Nuremberg-style rally and military parade in D.C. over the July 4th holiday. And make no mistake about it, this is something that Donald Trump has enthusiastically called for and rallied his knuckle-dragging hordes around. And all of us should remember and act on the fact that this will be an all-out and deadly fascist targeting of many thousands of immigrants. They cannot be allowed to get away with this. And as should be clear at this point, events are moving quickly. We're going to be covering all of this and more in the weeks to come. But keep checking RevCom.us and tune into RevCom on social media to get informed and get involved. I will post regular links on Facebook as well.
And I should remind people on the other side of the screen are telling me right away. Once again, I forgot to say my name, okay, the name of the show. My name is Michael Slate. And coincidentally, the show is The Michael Slate Show. See? And we're going to jump into our first guest. Well, not into the first guest. We're going to let her sit there and be comfortable. But she is someone who produced a remarkable film. And I'm sure she's produced many remarkable films, but this one in particular really grabbed my heart. And it's a film that's called Blue Note Records, Beyond the Notes. And the person, the director of that is Sophie Huber?
Yes.
Okay. Hi, Sophie. How are you?
Hi, Michael. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Well, let's go out and get something to eat.
Yeah, right.
Let's talk about this, because I want people to, maybe what I can do first is I can play this 2-minute clip, because, you know, you produce what you did here. As you produced something that was like both uniquely historical in terms of how things developed, but also very present, you know. And I wanted to talk about that in a minute. But what do you feel about going starting out with this 2-minute clip?
I think that's a good idea.
Okay, all right. So Teddy, let's hit that, man. This is from the Blue Note Records, Beyond the Notes, and we're here with director Sophie Huber. So let's listen to that. Thank you.
nowadays with what's going on in the world, I think it's forcing people to tap into that realness, that experience, and really write from there.
A lot of this music, it has to do with how we feel about America and how we came from seeming to progress to going back to an era that we fought to get away from. A lot of that feeling, that kind of frustration, some of that's in the music, along with all the hopeful stuff. The music is only a tool to express what's inside.
All right, welcome back. And that was a cut from the film Blue Note Records, Beyond the Notes. And it was different musicians talking about jazz and Blue Note and really just that in the world and its place in the world and what it means to people. And so I have to say that I am really, really pleased to have the director, Sophie Huber, in the studio with me. And let's talk about this.
Right. Well, thank you for having me. It's so important to, you know, get the word out because we don't have a marketing budget, basically. And so we just, need everybody to know about it. And because I feel it's an art form that's underappreciated in America. This film has been mainly funded out of Europe, you know, through Swiss taxpayers. I'm a Swiss citizen. And what we just heard was the beginning of the film where we see the young artists set up for a session. Robert Glasper, Ambrose Akinmusiri, Derek Hodge, Lionel Lueke, Kendrick Scott, Marcus Strickland. That amazing artists. And I wanted to make sure that I'm starting from the present and with the present artists and then look back at that long history. This is Blue Note's 80th anniversary.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things about this is actually the people who founded Blue Note, because before this, there wasn't anything that was like that in many ways. Let's talk about that a little bit. What's so special about Blue Note?
Well, to me, what's really special and one of the reasons I wanted to do this is when I started learning about Alfred Lion and Frank Wolf, the two Jewish founders who escaped Nazi Germany to start Blue Note in New York 80 years ago in 1939. And they were not business people. They had no idea of the record business, but they were just jazz fans. They were crazy jazz fans. And they wanted to record the albums that they wanted to hear. So they picked artists like Thelonious Monk, who nobody else recorded at that time, who we might not know without, you know, them and their passion for the music. So that's something that just really moved me. Also their collaboration with the African-American artists who, you know, both came from oppressive situations and created this incredibly powerful music that's still so important and present today.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I got into as I was watching it, and I think I've watched it 3 or 4 times now, so
good.
I'm a little psychotic. You say, oh, good. Everybody else that knows me is like, oh, God, he's watching it again.
I've seen it 500 times.
There you go. Okay, we should hang out. But one of the things about the artist being treated really differently at Blue Note, that's really important because, you know, this whole point of prior to that, and even some of the people that are in the film talk about that other labels, they would go, they would feel like they were being used, they were providing, you know, whatever for the label, but nothing of their heart and of their spirit. And Blue Note actually really worked on making sure that people brought out their heart, that they brought out their spirit, and that they were able to create what they really, really felt a need to create. Let's talk about that a little.
Yeah, I think this is why Blue Note is what it still is today, you know, and why it is one of the most important jazz labels if not the most important. But that integrity that's behind the record that continues today, you know, that's something that's important for Dawn Wars as well. And I've talked to all the artists, and it's not just sort of a thing everybody says. It is truly they can do whatever they want. And that's just something that is so important today, to not just, you know, to not be guided by commercial goals, but by a necessity to just express, you know, your point of view.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things too that actually you talk about, and it's really interesting to me, because the different artists, one, you said like, yes, okay, artists are treated differently at Blue Note, but it's also what that meant. Like, for instance, with Thelonious Monk, you know, the fact that he actually, I mean, if people listen to Monk's music, you know, there's something, a whole different, you know, plateau that he's on. And, you know, that he actually was able to find the freedom to change the whole nature of jazz composition by being at Blue Note.
Yeah, I think they, I mean, I can only, you know, imagine what, I feel they probably felt a similar thing that I feel when I hear Monk, which is this something so kind of raw, and it just hits you straight in the heart somehow. And still, you know, I've listened to these songs many, many, many times throughout the edit, and still, you know, if I hear Round Midnight, it just hits me. So I think it's coming from that feeling, and that was what drove everything, and not a commercial concern.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they loved him. They became really good friends. Alfred Lion, one of the founders, you know, helped him and his wife financially. It almost ruined the company because they didn't sell well in the beginning.
You know, it's interesting because that's one thing that comes through a lot in your film, which is that the relationship between the people that own the company and the artists. And it was really, I mean, they really did sort of put themselves in there, and they were part of that scene. And they were actually, you know, it was part of the thing of, even that, you know, it's just one thing, we don't have to talk a lot about this, but I just thought it'd be interesting because when we're talking about all the various forces of people who were there, and you talked about Monk, but then there's other art, Blakey, Wayne Shorter, Herbie Hancock, all these people were up in there. I mean, everybody who was into jazz, and we'll talk about this in a minute, but I just wanted to make this comment because it really struck me. You even had somebody who's like notoriously difficult to work with, Miles. Miles Davis was in there, and he was actually able to, you know, he got in and he would pose things like, do you ever get tired of playing music that sounds like music? Which actually caused other people to think about things and to create differently, which I thought was one of the things that was really strong about Blue Note, being able, where artists were able to actually create, you know, and not have to follow the rules.
Yeah, yeah, and they were encouraged to bring new music, you know, to write new music and not just play the standards.
Mm-hmm.
And they were paid for rehearsals, which nobody else did. So that's why Blue Note has a lot of original music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why in the film you see, like, sometimes they have 27 takes because they actually create the track there. You know, like Sidewinder, Lee
yeah.
Morgan's, they
yeah.
took take 25.
And there's a great scene in the film where it's like, take 25. Okay, that's the one that did it. You're sitting there going, take 25. But no, that's true. But it's actually, there's a beauty to that. You know, there's the beauty of actually, one, the creative process, but there's also the beauty of what was produced and what was brought from what they started out with and ended up in the what they put forward. One of the things we have to talk about before we get to the end is this point about, at Blue Note, people also, it wasn't just, you know, people coming in and playing music that meant nothing to nobody. It was really, I mean, and you can see this throughout the film, there's people talking about the importance of the music to Black people, but it's also, there was something here where how artists affected the world at large, you talked about. And that was the music in the civil rights movement, which was really, I mean, it was very heavy because a lot of people don't even realize what link is there between jazz and what was going on at Blue Note and people fighting for their rights as human beings in this country, Black people fighting for their rights as human beings in this country.
Yeah, I think it's always been there, you know, throughout the history of African Americans, the connection of the circumstances and the music, you know, whether it's the gospel, the blues, jazz, and now hip hop as well. So I think there's you, as Robert Glasper says in the film, this music comes out of messed up situations. And what I find so inspiring about all of these artists is how they make something so something that lifts one up out of these circumstances. You know, like I listened to Bud Powell's Un Poco Loco, you know, after that I've listened to it 1,000 times. Each time this comes on, it's just invigorating, you know. And to do that and to create that out of these circumstances, that's just amazing to me.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to have to move real quick, but I did have one thing I wanted to ask you, which is, you know, you talk about this and it's sort of that the fact that one of the things that Blue Note did really importantly was in the midst of everything that was happening, the artists were given the room to create something that allowed people to feel freedom and hope. And that's pretty, and that is that rope that goes from jazz all the way through. And it's really intriguing that you, the way you actually trace that, the influence onto hip hop and other forms of music. But that whole idea of giving the artists creating something that allowed the people to feel freedom and hope, that was something very important.
Yeah, and it was important to me to sort of string this all together to today, you know, and that's what connects everything together, the Jewish founders, but then also, you know, Kendrick Lamar in a way and his art.
Jewish founders who were forced to flee Germany and the Nazis, and then you come here and you have black people and other oppressed peoples in this country facing the Nazis here now, you know, which we can talk a whole lot more about. And actually sometime we'll sit down and talk about all that because it is important. Okay, once again, we're talking about Blue Note Records. The film is Blue Note Records, Beyond the Notes. And we're talking with the director, Sophie Huber. And Sophie, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Michael.
Sometime you'll have to come back and we'll talk for like hours.
Good.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a quick break and be right back, so stay tuned. Was Needed You Still, Resting Warrior, by one of the groups from the Blue Note film, The Robert Glasper Residency. Now we're going to hear a statement on the Freeway 9.
When your government is putting immigrants and children in cages, banning abortion outright, destroying the ecosystems of this planet, should you do nothing? Or will you do the right thing? 8 members of Refuse Fascism and the Revolution Club blocked the 101 freeway twice with a 50-foot banner which read, Trump Pence regime must go. This was a call from Refuse Fascism for millions to drive out this regime. 5 are on trial now at the Metro Court. The anti-terrorism division of the LAPD admits sending an infiltrator into Refuse Fascism meetings at a church to secretly record this movement. LA City Attorney Mike Fuhrer is out to criminalize and silence dissent. Call LA City Attorney Mike Fuhrer's office to say no way. When is enough enough? Come to Metro Court on Hill in Washington, 6th floor in downtown LA to support the defendants and get involved in the defense committee. For more info, call Refuse Fascism at 323-946-1742.
You got to give the people.
Yeah, got to give the people what they want. All right, you know, people who have been listening to this show for quite some time, or even a relative period of time, know that we've been, basically, we've been following a lot around a particular, you know, just basically the whole existence of fascism, the Trump regime concentrating that, and the need for resistance that has been taken up in the streets by, and I'll just say this in a big way, it's been taken up by Refuse Fascism and by the basically people associated with the Revolutionary Communist Party as well. And right now, you know, what's happened is after this, there was an action that where the Freeway 9, and I remember this because I was coming down the freeway and I saw this suddenly this big banner across the freeway. And basically, I came in and I thought, you know, what's the holdup there? What's the holdup there? And I looked and there was a line of people with a big banner denouncing the Trump-Pence fascist regime. And they were making it known. It was one of those points, and we'll talk with this person about it. There were a number of people were arrested, and two of them are right now facing some very serious charges. And here to talk with us about this is, and I'm really helping, really, really pleased to welcome her back to the show, is Michelle Chai, who's a regular on this show, it seems. Michelle, how are you?
Hey, Michael, I'm good.
You weren't supposed to laugh at being a regular, so yes, I am a regular, and I'm damn proud of it, okay? So let's talk about this. You know, we're having you on to talk about what's happening with the, there's a lot of developments with the Freeway 9, with the two people in particular have gone on, and how the system has really gone after the people that participated in this, and especially with these two people now who are being facing charges and possible jail time in relation to demonstrating on the freeway to bring people's attention to the need to do something to stop the fascism that's growing and being planted by and nurtured by the Trump regime. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, so as you said, you know, this was an action back in 2017, and people in Refuse Fascism, you know, and as you've been covering, as I would know because I'm on your show a lot, that, you know, we're living in very dangerous times, right? And back in 2017, where the threat of nuclear war with North Korea was very alive, right? I mean, it hasn't died down, but it's still, like, very alive, you know, it was very alive when they were really threatening, you know, to incinerate, you know, people in North Korea, where there were this persecution against immigrant people, right, was beginning, where he was openly calling immigrants criminals and animals and rapists, and, you know, and threatening to strip away the rights of women from controlling their body. And fast forward to, you know, a year and a half later, right, where we're living in a situation where there's literal concentration camps, right? And back in 2017, these people recognized that this was the direction where this was headed to, right? This was a very urgent situation. They got on the 101 freeway, held a 50-foot banner, right? On two occasions, they held signs, and one of them they held the 50-foot banner that said Trump Pence must go. And this was sounding the alarm of fascism, right? And calling on people that to step out of the normal business as usual, right, while all of this was happening. And to call on people to take to the streets in our millions and demand that the Trump-Pence regime must go, right? And it took the city of Los Angeles almost a year, and they filed charges against 11 people in total, because there's other, you know, and hopefully I could come back on your show and talk more about this, but they were also facing charges for a protest being out on the campus of UCLA. But the city attorney pressed charges against 11 people, including myself, for conspiracy, right? And I wasn't even on the freeway. But people that actually got out of the business as usual and recognized that these are urgent times and called on people to step out of those normal bounds, right? And actually call and for the kind of protest, the massive nonviolent sustained protest to demand the removal of the Trump-Pence regime. And currently, there are two of those people that are on trial. We got a jury trial, you know, and this trial is taking place in a time where, again, there's literal concentration camps, you know, and this whole time that the prosecution has been arguing through the whole trial that this is not a political trial, right? That this has, that all this has to do with is whether or not these people made a traffic violation or not, right? And has actually been fighting to keep out of the courtroom the message, right? The message that these people brought on the freeway, right? That the Trump Pence regime must go. And to the point where, you know, now they're filing this motion, right, where they're wanting to ban any message regarding Donald Trump, immigration, fascism, social injustices, right? These are the actual words from their motion. And we just got word that the judge actually rejected this motion. But right now, currently, the jury is deliberating. They've taken this case and they're deliberating, and it has been for the past 2 days, the jury has been deadlocked, right? Meaning like they actually disagree, right, on whether it's guilty or not guilty. And the prosecution is trying to directly interfere, wanting to go in and directly, you know, ask them if they've been influenced by, you know, by any of the messages that has been in the courthouse, right? And a lot of the supporters have been wearing T-shirts that say things like, would you have convicted Rosa Parks, right? Would you have convicted the people that hid Anne Frank, right? And this is this is jury mandering, right? Because, you know, this is, you know, they're trying to go in and, like, interfere with the jury.
Well, tell me this, because it's very heavy. I mean, when you think about this, there is actually, you know, and I was there for a couple of days and I saw some of it, that the way it came down. And there really was, particularly when the state was actually trying to make this argument that there's nothing going on here. There's nothing happening here except that these people violated traffic laws and they were, you know, this is what's happening. But then basically... the people who are on the side of righteousness and truth and everything else and came out and said, look, this, we were compelled to do this, that there actually is, there's no way that we could have gone on living our own lives if this was ignored. So let's talk about that a little bit, because I know you started to, but I want to talk about it a little bit more so people can understand that these people are facing actual jail time, that these people are actually standing up in the face of that and saying, no, we're not backing down. We're saying what we did was right, damn it. So, you know, people got to come out and support that.
Right. I think that's important because, so the two people on trial are Alex and Chantel, right? And these people took the stand and actually, you know, talked about why they did it. And it was very moving and very powerful, you know, because it was this point about, you know, you played the video of, that was Chantel, right? Talking about, you know, when your government is putting children in concentration camps, when they're stripping away the rights of women to control their body, when the existence of humanity is literally being threatened, what do you do, right? Do you take to the streets and act, you know, in the name of humanity and call on other people to join you in that? Or do you just sit back and wait for something somewhere to do something, right? And these people said no, right? This is enough, right? They you know, when you think about what it actually takes to get on a freeway and hold the banner, like, these people are courageous and their actions need to be multiplied, right? And they are still calling, and in the face of facing trial, they're facing 3 years in jail and thousands of dollars in fines, you know, and it's, you know, it's more than just about them, because it has to do with, as we've seen the pictures, right, of the father and the child that drowned at the Rio Grande, right, like trying to cross. That's what's at stake. If that is going to continue to happen, right, or if we're going to act in the name of humanity to put an end to those outrages. And, you know, and again, this call of people to actually step out and get out into the streets in our millions, the world is crying out for that. In the face of that, you're being told that if you step out the way that they did, that you're going to face what they're facing, charges and jail time, right? Which is just a bunch of BS, because, you know, while fascism is ripping up the rule of law, right? And while fascism is becoming the law, you know, what do? Right? Do you just say, oh no, we got to follow the law. We have to, you know, just stay within our lane, or do you break from that? Right? And that was the point of those T-shirts that the supporters wore around. Would you have convicted Rosa Parks? Would you have convicted the people that hid Anne Frank, right? Because that's the stakes that are in front of us right now.
Mm-hmm. Just let me make this announcement, Michelle, and this is, you're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking now with Michelle Chai about the arrest, the charging, the trial of people who were part of a really important demonstration that blocked the freeway, the 101 freeway, on a workday morning and said, you know what? Wake up. Damn, you've got to wake up, because if you allow this to go down, you know, this is like not only, it's not only sort of a bad thing. We're actually talking about the possibility of the extinction of the planet, humanity, and all of that. And that's not something that's not a hype. That's actually really what could come out of a Trump regime running free. You know, this is what's going on. So, Michelle, tell me this, man. You know, one of the things that actually is going on now is, you know, again, as the prosecutor has said, you know, numerous times in this, is like, really, please just stop talking about this as a political motion. If they were out there and they wanted to do this, they wanted to actually just make their statement, then that would have been fine, you know. But instead, what they were doing was they were endangering themselves and other people by stopping traffic in the freeway. And I wanted, you know, and then what they do with this and the arguments that they're making in the court are really twisting and trying to claim that there is no political intention here. It's just simply a matter of law and breaking the law. And I think it's important for people to understand this, because I do think that what, you know, and, you know, I know you started to speak to this, but is there anything else you could add to that? Because I think it's really important that people understand that this is, in fact, a fight, not just around these people. They should be free. They should be free. They should be celebrated. But at the same time, there's a fight around which way is society going to go and what's going to be done with this. And I wanted to talk with you about that for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's important, because in the courtroom, right, and this is something that's very outrageous and that is actually currently happening, right, is that the prosecutor, since the very beginning of the trial, he's actually fought, right, to have important information around this case to not be mentioned through the trial, meaning that, so the LAPD, right, the counterterrorism division, right, sent in a confidential informant, a spy, into our Refuse Fascism meetings, right, to gather information. And that was actually the basis on which they charged me with conspiracy. But they actually fought, and they actually have been fighting through all the way to not have this information be talked about in the trial. When you think about, like, important information, right, that actually does show the nature of this, of these trials, the fact that this is political persecution, the people that are calling for the removal of the Trump Pence regime, the people that are getting out of the bounds of, like, what's supposed to be the normal, you know, they're being prosecuted, and they're telling you that this is political persecution by telling you that there's a spy that was sent into the Refuse Fascism meetings, and they don't want to bring that up during the trial, right? And through the whole time, the prosecution has fought over and over and over again to have our T-shirts removed out of the courtroom, to have, you know, for there to be no such conversation about the political aspect of this, right? We come in again with our T-shirts, some of them, you know, wearing the Revolution Latinas T-shirts, some of them wearing the Refuse Fascism, no, right, with the in the back that says drive out the Trump Pence regime, which the defendants were wearing when they did the action, right? And they're wanting to have all of that, you know, banned from the courthouse, to the point where, you know, and I have them in front of me, right? I'm going to read some of, like, this motion that they filed yesterday, right? But they're basically saying that people are requesting this court to prevent future attempts to influence the jury by ordering the removal of any sign, banner, clothing, leaflet, announcement, recorded or live, or any other form of communication that bears any message regarding issues raised in this trial, including but not limited to Donald Trump, immigration, fascism, social injustices, etc. So he's basically arguing that everything that this trial has to do with, for the judge to remove that from the courthouse, and he's also argued for it from outside of the courthouse. Right, because according to him, we're trying to influence the jury. But what we're doing is we're going out to the general public. You know, this is why we're on your show, you know, reaching out to the general public and actually posing this to them. Because in the face of the real threat of fascism, in the face of, like, fascists becoming the actual law, you know, these people are saying you cannot talk about this, right? You cannot, and they're actually going after the people that are calling for the kind of protest needed to remove this fascist regime from power, right? And so, and again, we got word that this motion got denied by the judge, right? So it's an ongoing fight, but these people keep, you know, taking out their fangs, right, and actually going very openly after this. And the basically, these people are the mouthpieces for the Trump-Pence regime, and they're prosecuting this whole case. And this is why more and more people are needed to actually come down to the courthouse to, you know, wear your shirts with different messages, right? That's what we want, people with different messages to send your statement of support to refuse fascism and, you know, and to continue to reach out to as many people to know about this, right? Because there's a lot of people that think, well, that can't be my government, you know, that can't be, you know, that's not this country, but it is, you know, it actually is. Mm-hmm. And it shows something about, you know, the direction in which this society is headed to, you know, mm-hmm. just in the way that back in during the 1940s, right, during under Hitler, right, if people that stood up, what do? They went after them. They shut down every form of dissent in order to ram through their fascist program. And that's what's happening here, you know, and again, there's larger stakes here. And, you know, and we're going to continue to fight, you know, and people out in, you know, that are listening to this, again, should come down to the courthouse.
And real quick, where can people find out more information on their own about this?
People should go to refusefascism.org and revcon.us.
All right. I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Michael.
Sure, Michelle. I'm looking forward to talking to you again soon. All right?
Yes.
Take care. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've just been talking with Michelle Chai from Refuse Fascism and the Revolution Club. And we've been talking about the case that's going on in the courts now in L.A., a very serious attempt to basically shut down any and all protest against the rise of fascism here. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. So stay tuned.
July 4th, 2019. Imagine a world without America. A call to act. I am Gregory Joey Johnson. I was a defendant in the U.S. Supreme Court case, Texas versus Johnson, that decided that burning the American flag in protest is constitutionally protected speech. I support and endorse this call from the National Revolution Tour and the Revolution Club. On July 4, 1852, the great anti-slavery fighter Frederick Douglass said, "For revolting barbarity and shameless hypocrisy, America reigns without a rival." As we approach July 4th, 2019, the American flag flies over concentration camps on the border, blesses the bombs and planes and troops that have murdered and mangled hundreds of thousands of children. It flies over the pens that mass incarcerate, especially Black, Latino, and Native Americans. It's pasted on the derricks that drill into the earth and destroy the environment. It is on the lapels of the legislators who rip from women the right to control their own bodies. It is waved by the shameless fascist Trump, who struts as president and plans to bray and grunt a speech that day in Washington, D.C. We echo Frederick Douglass and say, "Barbarity and hypocrisy?" Truer words were never spoken, whether back then, today, or all through U.S. history. And we echo and stand with the leader of the revolution today, Bob Avakian, when he says, "If you can conceive of a world without America, without everything America stands for, and everything it does in the world, then you've already taken great strides and begun to get at least a glimpse of a whole new world. If you can envision a world without any imperialism, exploitation, oppression, and the whole philosophy that rationalizes it, a world without division into classes or even different nations, and all the narrow-minded, selfish, outmoded ideas that uphold this, if you can envision all this, then you have the basis for proletarian internationalism. And once you have raised your sights to all this, how could you not feel compelled to take an active part in the world historic struggle to realize it. Why would you want to lower your sights to anything less?
All right, that was Joey Johnson. And Joey, you there?
I'm here, Michael. Really great to hear your voice.
You too, man.
Hey, can I send a shout out real quick to the Freeway 9 and the UCLA 5? They are heroes. I got their back.
Okay, all right, man. All right, and I hope they all heard that. So let's talk about this. I just want to dig into this real quick because right now we're living in a period where there is, you know, a massive move on the part of all the people that are ruling this country, and especially the Trump-Pence regime. But, you know, no one's questioning where things are going in terms of the authorities. There's a wave of reactionary stuff going on. And the question of that, you in the middle of that, you're talking about going to D.C. and standing up against all this on July 4th. Let's talk about that for a minute. And we're going to also be joined by the person who's sitting next to me and giving me a really dirty look, Carl Dix. Carl, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on again, Michael.
Yeah, definitely. Well,
hey, Carl.
How you doing, Joey?
I'm great, man. Good to hear your voice, too.
Same here.
You guys can't continue. We don't have much time. But let's talk about, I'll ask you, Joey, first. What are we going to do? What are you calling for? It says that, you know, you made a pretty, you know, intense stand and public stand about what you think and what you think needs to be done in relation to this now, and especially in relation to what's going on.
Well, I think it's urgent that people, number one, let's look at reality. You know, Trump has arrogated to himself this 4th of July celebration. It was like historically a nonpartisan event. Not that I was into it when it was nonpartisan. It was still centered around America first. America has having this special mission in the world. And no, America is a country that has a whole history, all right, a history of slavery, of genocide of the Native Americans, of 100 years of open Jim Crow segregation, of the mass incarceration of 2 million, mainly Black and Latino people. The things I described in what you played before we came on the air together. But what Trump is doing now around this 4th of July rally in D.C., it really is going to be like a Nuremberg rally. And there's no exaggeration in saying that. He longs for, he's fighting for an America, make America white again, make it xenophobic, make it jingoistic, make it misogynistic. What, the 22nd woman to accuse him of sexual assault? That's what he's modeling for the whole country and for the world as head of state. You know, there's going to be this celebration with a military flyover celebrating America's military might. Think about that as B-52 nuclear equipped jets fly over the people of Iran, you know, tormenting them, terrorizing them. This is the real world that flag is a brand logo for. So I'm going to be there in D.C. on that. What Trump says, come on down, bring your flag. I'm going to bring my flag. I'm going to bring my book of matches, because we have to do this. We have to stand with the people of the world, and that's what's at stake.
Mm-hmm. Now tell me this, man, because one of the things that actually I found really important in terms of, you know, here's the thing. You know, you're saying this, and you're saying it and I think it's extremely important because you're saying it in a time period and in a world where there's a lot of people have a lot of confusion about this, I think, and there's a lot of anger, but there's also needs to be a very clear-minded thing. And one of the things before we go on to that, I have to say this, okay, is you're listening to the Michael Slate Show. And so, Joey, you know, one of the things I really wanted to, you know, sort of think about, or I've been thinking about since I've been reading all the stuff that you've been talking about and the things that people have been writing and doing, you know, and there's something that's very, very important about what you challenged people around, you know, when you went and you said, you know, who you are and this world without America and the idea that it's for revolting barbarity and shameless hypocrisy, America reigns without a rival, you know, Frederick Douglass's thing. And I wanted you to talk to people a little bit about that, because it's really important that people understand that the longer you maintain any kind of, you know, gentle feeling towards this country, the more you're actually backing up the incineration of the world now and the people in the world now and the possible end of, and quite frankly, even the possible end of the world as it exists now. But this is something that, you know, you have a fascist regime and people thinking that they can somehow just sort of like play along with it or go along with it and try out the all the things that have happened before and not seeing what the real content of this is and what needs to be done.
That's really important, Michael. You know, the way I put it is there's a lot of people, for example, that would give absolutely no quarter to racism or white supremacy, and yet they're blind to American chauvinism or America's dominance in the world and the real-world consequences of that, how people are suffering horrifically. I mean, 85,000 children have died of the bombs that the U.S. supplied to the Saudi regime to drop on the people of Yemen. 85,000 children have died from those bombs or from famine and starvation caused by the whole disruption, upheaval of their country. This is the real world that this is happening in. This is beyond the 3 million people that were killed in Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia during the Vietnam War, or the 3 million killed in Korea during the Korean War. These are wars for empire, and the flag is a brand logo for that. So the importance of like struggling against American chauvinism, these blinders people having to like what's going on the rest of the planet, and what does this country have to do with the needless suffering of literally billions of people across the planet? Mm-hmm. So this has got to be fought out, mm-hmm. and the stakes are high for humanity. And once again, it's a Nuremberg rally, and people should have stood up in Nazi Germany during those Nuremberg rallies. I don't know the full extent that people did that, but I know that a lot more should have, and maybe it would have changed the outcome. The stakes are really high.
Now we're talking with Joey Johnson about imagine a world without America. Okay, and that's a fairly exciting imagination, whatever. To those of us who actually understand what's going on and see what's going on. And sitting across from me is a person who actually understands all this very deeply. Carl, let's talk about this. What do you think about what Joey was saying?
No, I think what Joey is saying is important because, look, imagining a world without America and then acting to bring into being a world without everything that America stands for is in the interest of humanity. It's in the interest of the 7 billion people on this planet, you know, because America has historically and present day meant crimes against humanity and war crimes. And to be drawn into trying to claim the mantle of America from Trump, who is supposedly despoiling it or fouling it, is to be drawn onto the wrong terms. You know, and that's too much what's happening because the resistance to Trump is claiming that he's not patriotic enough. That he is the one who's not patriotic and they're the real patriots. And if you get drawn into those terms, what are you embracing? You know, because you look at the family separation and the caging of children and immigrants in concentration camps, and people are rightly horrified by that. But then a lot of people say, this ain't the America I know. Well, your problem is you don't know America because family separation is as American as apple pie. Go back to the beginning, the slave auction blocks, where families were torn apart as husband and wife were sold to different owners, as children were ripped from the arms of their parents. Talk about concentration camps. What happened to the indigenous inhabitants of this land? They were slaughtered, hit with disease, their land was stolen, and then they were cooped onto reservations. Fort Sill in Oklahoma, where they're putting immigrants today, was where they put native people back in the 19th century. Geronimo was interned there. This is what America has always meant, and this is why we need to get to a world without America and everything that America represents. And it's important to go up against that Nuremberg rally, because it is a Nuremberg rally, but not with a stand of our patriotism is better than yours, but to hell with your patriotism. And to go up against it in the way that Joey was talking about, bring your flags to D.C. and to other places around the country, because I understand there's a call to go to the border with Mexico. But bring your flags and your book of matches, or your lighter if you're going to go at it that
It'll
way.
It'll be a well-lit because, night, let's put it that way.
And that is what humanity needs. Humanity needs that to be happening here in this country, including that part of humanity that's in this country. They actually need to be, you know, encountering the sight of that red, white, and blue rag going up in flames. And as we've seen, because when we launched the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour here in Los Angeles in early June and capped it off by burning five American flags in front of the 77th Precinct in South Central L.A., a number of people were, like, electrified by that, electrified and delighted. And in fact, when we were practicing to do it, we encountered people who were like, wow, man, I haven't seen anybody do that for a long time. This is awesome. This is great. And then other people will be jolted by it, but they need to be jolted by it because they got to get out of, you know, the way that they've been thinking. And this is something that I have been dealing with all my life, because I got drafted into the U.S. Army back in the 1960s, given orders to go to Vietnam. And I had to confront, what would I be doing in Vietnam? And I saw that it would be drowning the liberation struggle of the Vietnamese people in blood. And that was something that I could not be a part of. But I also realized that's what the U.S. Army does. That's what they did in the 60s. That's what they did in Korea. Go all the way back. Every war they fought, that's what they did. You know, even the Great War, the World War II, they capped it off with atomic bombs dropped on Japanese cities that incinerated tens of thousands of people after Japan had already said, okay, we'll surrender on your terms, or we want one term, which was acceptable to the U.S., and they still dropped those bombs to deliver a message. That's what this country has meant historically, and that is why we have to get beyond it. And this July 4th piece, you know, called for by the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour, is a part of delivering its message that this system can't be reformed. It must be overthrown. And doing it in a way that both brings forth the politics, but also confronts people with a vision of an organized and disciplined force that is standing against all of these horrors and pointing the way toward and acting to bring into being a force that can get rid of them all through an actual revolution.
Mm-hmm. Joey, we have just a few minutes left. I want to get any comments you have on this that I think would people need to hear what you have to say on this, man.
You know, man, I'm really glad you got me on with Carl in terms of his overall experience as a leader in the revolution, but in particular the stuff he's saying about his experience, like defying the orders, you know, for him to go to Vietnam, because one of the ways they've been trying to intimidate or to muzzle me, not only me, but everybody broadly who thinks like this, is like invoking the veterans, you know, and, you know, thanking them for their service. And I'm like, well, let's talk about their service. Let's talk about what they did in these countries, the night raids, the white phosphorus bombs, the Abu Ghraib, the massacres of civilians, the helicopter gunships, you know. You know, the real heroes are people like Chelsea Manning, who expose those atrocities of war. The real heroes are the soldiers who stand up against this and resist it with from within the military, or call out these crimes, you know, after they're out of the military or while they're in the military, whatever. You know, I just think that it's think about it. They want you to have an understanding of the flag based on what do a group of people, i.e. the vets, you know, and they're not monolithic, but what they've been indoctrinated and brainwashed to think about the flag. No, we got to be scientific about how the flag is actually a brand symbol, a logo for an empire across the planet that is exploiting hundreds of millions, billions of people, and that flag is the brand logo for that, and it's the brand logo for a military armada that's used to enforce all of that. Mm-hmm. No, we got to stand with the people of the world, and that's the stakes.
All right, Joey, Carl, you wanted to make one final statement?
One final point. Imagine a world without America and everything it stands for, and then act to make it, bring it into being, get organized for an actual revolution tour, and dig into the work of Bob Avakian, because his work in bringing forward a whole new framework for communism and revolution actually points the way to how we can bring that world into being. And that's something that we're spreading on the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour. And you can follow it by going to revcom.us and on social media at TuneIntoRevcom.
All right, Joey, I want to thank you very much. If you have one real quick, like 1 minute thing you want to say.
I want to send my shout out again to the Freeway 9 and the UCLA 5. And on the 4th of July, people should do the right thing and burn that flag, that rag of empire, and stand with the people of the world. And like Carl says, get down with Bob Avakian, because there's a whole different future for humanity. And people need to confront the lies they've been told and find out the real deal about the revolution.
All right, Joey Johnson, thank you very much for joining us today, and talk to you again soon. And Carl, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on again,
all
Michael.
Right. We're going to go out now with "The Revolution Will Not Be Televised," Gil Scott-Heron, all right? And we'll talk to you again next week.
Blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nubs. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still lights of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key.